downstairs.
I'll still prefer the title.
That's a hero. That's a hero. Well, that's not a hero.
You're
good.
Welcome, everybody. It's 6:30, and thank you, everybody, attending the meeting of the Scrutiny Management Board. And we're here today to discuss the call-in on the Environmental Services contract options for delivery from June 2020. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available by the Council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. We move to agenda item 1, apologies.
I had apologies from Councillors Keith Harris and Seaton, Chair.
Thank you. Item 2 is disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to disclose a personal interest that I was the lead member when the contract with the company mentioned Serco was first agreed and also the first extension.
Thank you, Councillor Fyre. Councillor Hamilton.
And I would like to declare, as Councillor Hamilton, I'd like to declare that I'm one of the signatories of the call this evening, but I'm here in this meeting with an open mind.
Thank you. Item 3 is declarations of the party whip. Are there any declarations of the party whip? None to be made. And then the item 4 is the call-in of the Cabinet Decisions Environmental Services contract. And before we go on to the actual substantive item, I'll ask Jeff to go through the options that we have on the outcomes of this meeting.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So this is a call-in of Cabinet's decision from the 13th of September. Once you've completed your deliberations this evening, the options that are available to you as the Scrutiny Management Board are set out on pages 6 and 7 of the covering report. So your first option is to support the decision, which can then be implemented immediately. The second decision would be to send the decision back with your comments to the decision taker, which in this case is the Cabinet, who will then take the final decision. There is a third option constitutionally, which is that the matter will be referred to Council, but for that to be an option, this will need to be part of the budget and policy framework, which this decision doesn't fall part of. So you just have the two choices to make later this evening.
Thank you very much, Jeff. As part of our pack, we do have a paper, an exempt paper, an exempt item. And if we do discuss that, we will have to exclude members of the public. So please do indicate to me if you're going to refer to the purple paper in front of us. Okay, thank you very much. So as part of the call-in, I have Councillor Draycott who will present the call-in on behalf of the signatories. Thank you, Councillor Aycock, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
As you know, Cabinet agreed on September the 13th that the present environmental service contract is extended, and by that, that the work continues to be outsourced and that the contract remains a responsive one. Services provided in this contract include refuse collection, recycling, garden waste and street cleaning. The call-in was submitted by 6 Labour members for 2 main reasons. First, to question whether the outsourcing option is actually the best one. And second, to question whether a responsive option for street cleaning delivers the best service to residents. So just concentrating on the first reason, is outsourcing the best option? The Cabinet report states that the recommendation of the award of the extension to Serco was to ensure continuation of services to Charnwood residents in, quote, the most efficient and effective manner, end of quote, and to ensure maximised efficiency and effectiveness, end of quote, of the contract. Labour councillors would like the board to examine whether these aims can only be achieved by outsourcing and whether this option is indeed the best on all grounds or whether it is being recommended on ideological grounds. The UNOMA report, which is included in your paperwork, is non-committal on the question of whether outsourcing or in-house is a better option. It is therefore not the case that one or the other has proven to be superior in cost or efficiency. The report gives a list of pros and cons of both systems. Various advantages of in-house are given, such as, first, it gives greater flexibility and control of service change. By that it means avoiding lengthy negotiations when there are any changes. Another is that it allows any efficiency savings to be held by the council. And it also states that costs would be lower because the council is not for profit. Labour members feel strongly that if a contractor can provide the same or better service as in-house and still make a substantial profit, what does this say about the wages or working conditions of the employees? Residents and members have often seen Serco workers running whilst doing their work, with a bin in each hand, making sure that they complete their rounds in time. Are the cost savings in fact due to the conditions and wages of workers? Is the council getting a less expensive service by indirectly employing people with conditions we would not practice if they were directly employed? In addition, what kind of pension provision is given to outsourced employees? Also, the savings are made because it is a reactive service. Therefore, we are getting a cheaper service at the cost of indirectly employed personnel. Can we just say that this is not our concern? We believe that many residents would not feel comfortable with getting a service at the expense of the staff. The final point on this matter is why the fleet is being brought in-house but not the workforce. I would ask, what is the difference? Coming to the second point, which is to do with street cleaning. The contract is euphemistically called responsive in an attempt to give its nature a spurious positive spin. It is in fact a reactive contract. This means that the council relies on proactive residents and councillors to report areas that need cleaning or clearing. Leaving it to residents and councillors to continually keep reporting the same problems is not satisfactory. And councillors know that in the end, residents give up because they do not understand why the problem is not permanently addressed when the issue clearly shows it will continue to present itself. Councillor Keith Harris, Labour Shadow Spokesperson for this service, like many of us, has come across residents who assume that the service providers have a dedicated street cleaning, path clearing and tree pruning schedules. When it has been explained the actual nature of the contract to residents, they are baffled and not impressed and, as I say, give up complaining. The service apparently gets high percentages of satisfaction from complaints received. However, were the council to ask residents based on which option would you prefer, a proactive one or a reactive one, which we currently have, Labour members are convinced a contract with dedicated street cleaning schedules would be the preferred option. There is another matter why this Cabinet recommendation is being driven, which is in the exempt appendices, which I'll just stop at this point, Chair.
Cheers, thank you, Councillor Draycott. It is recommended that members of the public be excluded from the meeting during the consideration of the information set out in the attached appendices to the report on the grounds that they involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Local Government Act 1972. And the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest of disclosing the information. The appendices set out information which, if released to the public domain, may prejudice outcomes for the council and disclose commercially sensitive information about other organisations. And as such, we will go into exempt session.
So, Councillor Draycott, resuming. Finally, this kind of contract may be cheaper the way it is configured, but to call it efficient and effective is a spin. It is only effective if residents and councillors report jobs. Some paths are left until they are impassable and some gutters in certain areas filled with mulch. Until a resident reports these cases, the contractor doesn't have to do the work, and hence the frequency with which jobs are done is less and money is saved. Again, we feel that residents deserve a better street cleaning service. So now is the time we need to seriously weigh up the benefits of changing this contract so it provides better services and working conditions, yet still allows us to adapt to future developments, and also to take into account, I think, we need a more detailed discussion on the purple paper. And so I think out of the possible recommendations would be that we refer this back for further consideration. Is where I would leave it, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Councillor Draycott. Before you leave, any members of the board got any points, any questions of clarification on anything that Councillor Draycott has said before she leaves? So it's open yourself to question Councillor Draycott on any points of clarification.
I understand.
Okay.
Good. Okay, thank you, Councillor Draycott. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll now invite to the table lead member, Councillor P. Half David, to join us and give cabinet members a response, lead member's response, and her supporting officers with her.
You anyway. At the time that this item went to Cabinet, at that particular time, I believe we were working with the project board, as I have been doing, all through the journey up to making recommendations towards Cabinet. Actually, as lead member, have been through the minutiae with the team, and I felt that the decision taken was the most appropriate decision. And I'm sure that Matt or Chris or Matt primarily can answer all the questions that Councillor Draycott has brought to the table, and hopefully you'll come to a conclusion that the decision is the right decision.
Thank you. It's Matt Bradford, Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces. To start with, I'd like to give you some background, particularly on the street cleansing service and how that's provided, just to put some background there. The service doesn't rely on members of the public calling in to complain to keep the streets clean. They have a proactive service, and the contract actually requires the contractor to keep the streets and highways clean to grade A or B in accordance with DEFRA's code of practice on litter and refuse. So Serco deploy their resources out in order to keep those highways clean and deploy them in the best way possible. And in order to facilitate that, they have supervisors that inspect the district, and we have contract officers that do the same to take account of any particular issues that we have going on. If Serco don't keep the streets at a level A or B, they can be put under default, and there are financial penalties for them if they fail to adhere to the contracts that we have in place. So a grade A is clear of litter, and a grade B is predominantly clear of litter. The code of practice accepts, well, it says it's recognised that a grade A cannot be maintained at all times, and the presence of a few small items of litter and refuse not yet accumulated are regarded by the public as acceptable for short periods of time, and is expected of managers of land should, through monitoring and appropriate use of resources, keep their land clear of litter and refuse so that it does not fall below a grade B and cleanse to a grade A on a regular basis. And that is the basis of the contract that we've got, in line with the national guidance. There are occasions where members of the public phone in, they have a particular complaint about litter, and we respond. But that's not to say that we haven't got proactive resources out in the district 7 days a week cleaning all of our areas. So there is a responsive element to it. We do respond to complaints, but the underlying part of the service is proactive in cleaning the borough. And I think if we relied solely on complaints from residents to do street cleansing, we would soon see a huge lowering of the quality that we've got. So we have got a very proactive service. But on occasion, people phone up, they have an issue, and we get it resolved. We have got thousands of kilometres of roads in the borough, and it's impossible for us to cover every bit of road every month on our sample checking. So occasionally things happen that we need to respond to. But the basis of the service is proactive. So I'd just like to put that there. And I think I'd also like to say that our market research that we do, our satisfaction survey, is done on a quarterly basis by an independent market research company that shows that levels of satisfaction with street cleansing, people that are satisfied or very satisfied, are at 71%, which is very high for this particular type of service. The satisfaction for waste and recycling is at 95% as well. So, in looking at the contract extension, we looked at a number of different elements to form a view as to whether we should extend or take another view. We looked at cost, we looked at public satisfaction, and we looked at the quality of the service. And I think looking at the independent report that we've got, we were satisfied as a project board that we were getting a good service, high levels of satisfaction at a good cost. And that was compared to authorities in a like-for-like position with us. So that's the part on street cleansing and how that service is provided. We've got permanently resourced people out keeping our streets clean, and they're not all responding to complaints, they're doing that proactively. So just to make that clear. Has anyone got any questions on that part before I carry on with
them? Yeah, if you want to pause there and then we'll
any other
for
elements
questions?
of
things that street cleansing, no.
Councillor Hamilton.
Yes, thank you, Joe. On the UNEMIA report, we don't come out as high as we could on street cleansing. On page 37, it's sort of the average child would seem to be a little below the average line, isn't it?
That is for costs.
Is that for costs only?
The table on page 37 is for costs, and that shows that our spending per household per year is lower than the average cost on street cleansing.
Okay. Is there no measurement for satisfaction at all?
The consultants that we employed to do this report found it quite hard to do the satisfaction, actually, because there aren't many districts or boroughs that measure satisfaction as thoroughly as we do. I think we're quite unique in the way that we do it, actually. But of the recorded figures, we came second out of 15 for public satisfaction with the service.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Barton.
When the contract was originally let in 2009, it was calculated that 28% was approximately street cleansing. Is that still the right proportion, or still in the ballpark proportion? 28% is street cleansing and 72% waste and recycling.
Unfortunately, I haven't got those cost splits here with me tonight, so I couldn't really answer that question tonight, Councillor Parsons.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, I've got a couple of questions. Okay, Matt. Thank you very much for that part. Street cleansing circuit. How many operatives do they have that operate in Charnwood?
In Charnwood, I think.
Just on street cleaning, not the waste bins or anything like that.
Again, it's hard to. I don't have the answer to that individual question about how many are split between refuse and recycling and street cleansing, because we don't directly appoint those people.
Right. Okay. Financial penalties. How many financial penalties have we issued to Serco in the last 12 months, 24 months, 36? Well, one, two.
We haven't issued any in the last 12 months because we find they're largely compliant. It's a points-based system. So if we find that there's a fault on street cleansing, there's a rectification period. So it's normally 24 hours or multiples of 24 hours.
Can you remember the last time we fined them? for no, cleansing?
No, because there's a points threshold, and for each contract failure, it accumulates points, and they haven't got to the threshold, certainly in the last 2 years, where we're required to make a deduction.
Right, okay. And final question, and I don't want to get over this. Strict cleansing is only one part of the thingy, and reactive responsive. How do you know an area is clean?
I have four contracts officers that work within my team. They have responsibility for an area. They spend a lot of time out of the office monitoring the contract. That's their principal duty. So they inspect areas to make sure that they're clean, random inspections. It's required for the way that we monitor our performance indicators that we do random transects, they're called, stretches of road.
How often? How often do they do that?
Every month.
Every month. So yes. One operative once a month?
No, four operatives.
So once a month. Sorry, one person once a month, but per track.
Not once a month. They actively monitor all the time. They're out in the borough. They do formal monitoring. So we do between 30 and 50 formal monitoring for our performance indicators that's recorded. But while they're driving round, if they notice hotspot issues, that gets reported. And it's dealt with straight away. There are four officers, and whenever they're out on their part of the borough, they're monitoring to make sure that the cleanliness is what it should be.
Right, okay. And final question. It's on the same point, that's why. How would you know an area is clean?
We would know it's clean.
How would you know, yeah. There's got to be a definition, because I'm going to come on to you.
What we do is we do sample checking. Right, so we do sample checking, formal sample checking for measuring our KPI that's done on random sampling. The officers, my contract officers, are out all the time. They report any areas that are below contract standards, so we know from that. But as I said, there are thousands of kilometres of roads, and they can't drive every kilometre of road.
Okay. So how many times have your officers in the last year referred back to Serco to say this area isn't clean?
Hundreds
of times. Yeah. Okay, so the feedback is, there's a formal process to feedback?
Yes, definitely.
So if your officers are feeding back, then why aren't those streets clean in the first place? Serco is supposed to have kept those streets clean, A or B.
It's their requirement to keep those streets to standard A or B.
Yet your officers are feeding back hundreds of times a year.
They
does that tell you something?
Yes.
That's fine, that's okay. I don't need an answer, that was just a point. Councillor Ranson.
Can I actually come in on that? Being that, and my colleague next to me here, we're rural, and we do have a lot of fly tipping going on around Barra and down by Pillings Lock and that, and I must admit that I will stand at the corner of our team here, that any time that I've spotted it and I've seen them go out, within a matter of so many hours, that is actually cleaned. Now, we cannot be responsible, or nobody can be responsible for fly tipping, but that is a lot. There's asbestos, there's all sorts, and even down to this last week, I met Matt in the corridor and said, can you do it? It's only because I'm the borough councillor and I keep an eye, like you all do. Mm-hmm. So consequently, and I must admit, it's done within a matter of two or three hours.
That's fine. Councillor Fryer.
I was just going to ask on another thing, is still with street cleansing.
Yes, just the street cleansing.
We have to all bear responsibility for that, because the rubbish doesn't just come out of the sky. But I was going to ask Matt and the lead member, Mr. Bradford, the lead member, what we do in the way of publicising or education. We can, to make sure that we are working to make the residents more responsible. If I see rubbish outside my house, I don't ring up street cleansing and say, come and clean it. I'll pick it up myself if it's in my front garden or in the curb near the car. We all have to take some risks. I'm just wondering if there is anything within the contract that encourages people to, if for example, if it's always the same hot spot, that is always a problem, is anything proactively done there?
Thanks, Councillor Fry. It's Matt Bradford again. Well, I think this is where our contract works in our benefit, actually, because if there are hot spots for littering, sometimes near schools, we can have issues or fly tipping, Our contract is quite flexible in that it allows Serco and ourselves to deploy the resources in a flexible manner to increase the frequency of cleansing in that area, and that's what we do. I've worked with other contracts that do state that a particular road will be mechanically swept every 12 weeks and will be litter picked every 6, and those contracts are too rigid. You can't allow or get the flexibility that we have within our contract. So first thing is that if we do notice hotspot areas, the frequency of resources deployed to that area will be upped. We do work quite closely with street management to do poster campaigns on littering and fly tipping to make sure that we're educating people, but also there's an enforcement element there, so people littering from cars we've done things on. We've recently very successfully done a fly tipping campaign with other districts and boroughs across the county.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to keep it to the call-in aspect of it, but that's fine.
It's still part of it, it's a
I must admit, I was a little confused by the call-in initially, and I'm even more confused now that I fully understand it, because it seems to me that the call-in actually called in a decision to extend the contract, and that's what we should be actually talking about, rather than the nature of the contract itself, which I think is already in place and already working. Now, but to answer, I think, some of the questions is, if you go to a set routine of cleaning this street this week, which is what you've proposed as part of your call-in,
if you can leave that comment for the general discussion, is that okay? Because we're just asking from the officers.
Well, I actually need a response from Mr. Bradford, because I think it's important that he gets an opportunity to say whether he agrees with this or not, which is that if you go to the standard route, you actually have to have a separate response team on top of that, because one of the reasons for the high satisfaction rating is because you are able to adjust and send people out. If you've got people fly tipping or throwing a fridge or washing machine out on the verge, you don't want to leave it there and say, oh, well, we'll clean it up in 3 weeks' time. People get very upset about that. I mean, we've had it. I think everywhere has the problem with fly tipping nowadays. Actually concentrating the people where you need them is actually the most efficient way of doing it overall, and it doesn't matter whether it's in-house or external. That's the best way to do it. Now, I just wondered whether the officers would actually agree with that.
Thanks, Councillor Bevington. I think I agree. Certainly with those frequency-based contracts, the traditional contracts of 12 weeks mechanically sweeping, 6 weeks litter picking, you end up either missing areas that need more frequent cleansing or cleaning roads that don't need cleaning, which is the other wasted resource, really. So we find that the flexibility, the requirement for Serco to keep all roads and highways to a grade A and B all the time allows them to deploy their resources in the best possible way and most efficient way.
Are we moving on now?
Yeah, we're moving on to the table unless there's any further questions.
I'm moving on.
Yeah. So, Matt, if you want to carry on with other points of the...
I think probably next, Chair, if I could talk about the fleet.
Okay.
The vehicle fleet.
Are you going to refer to the purple paper? If you are, we'll have the context.
I'll just talk in general terms and if I have any questions that relate to costs, then we'll... I'll let you know. The industry standard for the life of a refuse vehicle at the start of this contract was 7 years. That was common across most refuse contracts. That was the life expectancy of a refuse vehicle. And for this type of work, either in-house providers or contractors sold them on, and somebody would make use of them, but they wouldn't provide the reliable sort of service that we require to collect from all of our households all of the time. So things changed really from the start of the contract. These vehicles no longer tip at landfill sites, they tip on hard standing, the technology's got better, and the vehicles are lasting longer than initially anticipated. So when we agreed the first extension period, the vehicles had been fully depreciated over the initial contract term, which meant we could extend the life of the vehicles for 3 years, and the council at the moment is enjoying a substantial discount from the contractor because we've depreciated those vehicles and we're still using them for a 3 year period. So we've got 7 years for the initial depreciation term. We extended the life of the vehicles for three, and that brings us to the end of the current agreed extension period. Those vehicles really are at the end of their useful life at that period. So all the vehicles that we're currently using will be effectively out of service from 2020. So as a council, we need to provide a fleet to provide that service. And we have three choices, really. We can require a contractor to provide them as part of a contract. We can lease them, or we can buy them ourselves. And the work that we did as part of the contract extension proposal was to look at those three options and look at which option would be the most cost benefit to the council. We took advice from Treasury Management Company to look at this, because if we buy the vehicles themselves, we either have to take money from reserves or borrow the money. And if we take money from reserves, the interest that we get on our investments is foregone. We took all of this into account, and the outcome was that we would be much better off purchasing the vehicles ourselves financially. A secondary benefit of that is that by owning the vehicles ourselves, it gives us a little bit of business continuity, because we have that resource that we could use if something happened to our contractor in the future. So there are a number of benefits to doing that, and that is the recommendation that we've made. But I don't think the decision really is whether we buy vehicles or not. We need to buy vehicles. It's whether we use our borrowing power, our cheaper borrowing power and our reserves to purchase those, or we require someone else to do it, borrowing at a much higher interest rate to pay for those vehicles. And I think that's for the panel to consider, really. But we will have to buy vehicles regardless of what we do from 2020 going forwards.
Right, without referring to the purple figure, any questions to Matt? And if you are going to refer to the figures, then we'll go into extent. Is that okay? It's just for direction, that's all. Jeff?
I have a number of questions, and okay. I will work very hard not to refer to the figures. What guarantees do we have after 4 years about the continued usage of the vehicles with other local authorities? So at the end of the term of this contract, when we won't have paid off the entire vehicle cost, but we've still got the vehicles. So in your own words, technology changes. We have an incinerator that may or may not change the entire nature of the waste environment in this area. Mm-hmm. Coming potentially. So I'm sitting looking at investing my money, were it mine, and I'm thinking, well, it's got 4 years, I've paid over half, looking at the figures, I've paid well over half the bill, and now I've got no contract, I've got a fleet, not worth the money it was when I paid for it 4 years ago and started the deal, and technology may or may not have changed, and I don't have guaranteed that there's going to be bigger contracts. So I'm sitting on behalf of residents on that risk in 4 years' time, or post contract ends. Mm. So what guarantees do we have available to us, if any, at that point, as to the viability of that fleet at that point, given the nature of technology on the vehicles itself, given the potential change in environment that we're facing with regard to waste in this area? And where's the guarantees for me? Because I've paid over half the bill as a member of the public, which probably means that the manufacturer's cushy. They've probably, they've probably got half their money and they're good. We've taken on all the risk. So if that fleet's redundant, we're still paying for the 4 years that it's not working. So, were it not to be working. So what guarantees do we have in place, if any?
Okay. Quite a lot of points there. The first one I'd like to talk about is you talked about the potential for an incinerator within the borough at Shepshed. There is planning permission for that. For us to take refuse there, the County Council would have to enter into an agreement with that incinerator once it opened, under a competitive tender process to take our waste in there. So that hasn't happened at this stage, may not ever happen at all, depending on what the council's County Council's disposal preferences are and whether they choose to contract with the operators of that incinerator. Effectively, you talked about the manufacturers of the vehicles that we've got. Effectively, we would be borrowing money from the Public Works loan vault, so from the government, and from our reserves. We've recommended a blended model to purchase these vehicles. So those vehicles would have been paid for, and we would be depreciating them. So the vehicles come with warranties. The vehicles would be leased to Serco with an embedded lease in the contract. The leases would be very strict. They stipulate the vehicle servicing regimes, and these vehicles are serviced very, very frequently, they're MOT'd frequently, and stipulate things like tread depth and the condition which they're to be kept in. It's very, very strict, really. I think whatever happens with waste and recycling, it is quite an uncertain time at the moment. I think we will need refuse collection vehicles. We will still be collecting from people's doorsteps, effectively, I think, into the future and for the next 10 years. So the fleet that we will be purchasing is primarily refuse trucks, if you like, but also street sweeping vehicles that last for 5 years, which we price that in, and small vans. So I don't think there'll be redundant at any point during those 10 years for council waste collection services at all. There may be new diesel engines coming along at some point in the future. The ones that we'll purchase, if that's the decision that's made, will be the latest Euro 6 diesel models. The market for RCVs isn't very well developed for electric vehicles at the moment. Maybe in 10 years' time it will be, but I can't really see a point in the next 10 years or moving forward with the contract up to 2030, as it would be, when these vehicles wouldn't be useful. They are pretty standard. They're not a variant type of vehicle where you get vehicles that are quite specialist, that have split compartments in the back. One side collects one thing, one side collects another. Ours are just very standard, common or garden refuse vehicles.
But at the end of the contract period, the maintenance would return to us. The costs of running the vehicles, or were we not then to have another contract with somebody else in place? So technically, we're taking risk beyond the life of the contract. We're taking, if you like, an 8-year depreciation. I understand all the financials. We're taking an 8-year depreciation on vehicles that at the end of the contract period may or may not have a life. And I admire your positivity about being able to predict the future in 10 years. I'm so confident in terms of the current fast-moving technology environment and waste and other bits and pieces, but I just think there's quite a big element of risk to the public beyond the end of the contract period. Whilst I know we'll need waste collecting, the environment is changing, and I'm not as certain beyond that period. And we'll have, you know, we've paid for them, we've got them, we're still paying the loan fund back. Yes, we're depreciating dollar dot. The public's carrying that risk were that fleet not then to be utilised because things have changed.
Matt, yeah. Do you want to come back on that point, and then I'll go to you.
If I could, I just wanted to come back on that point there, if I could specifically. So, Councillor Parsons is right. At the end of the 4-year term, the vehicles will have some residual life left in them, and we'll have a decision as an authority whether we want to do another tendering exercise and obtain another contractor, could bring the service in-house or do something else. But those vehicles will still have a useful life. How they're serviced will depend on the service delivery model that we choose at that particular time. But if we carried on outsourcing, the maintenance liabilities for those vehicles would pass to the incoming contractor at that point, and we'd make that part of the contract that they were responsible for doing that.
Okay. Councillor Benton.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure of the point, Jeff. We have to pay for those vehicles as part of this contract. What we're actually looking at, as I read this, is the cheapest way of doing that. We can, and to go back to the three options that we had, we can get Serco to buy them and we pay Serco. We can lease them and some other company buys them and we lease them off them. Or we can buy them ourselves. Now, of those three, by far the cheapest method is us buying them and paying for them. Apart from that, even if I know there's some money coming from reserves, but borrowing money is so cheap nowadays, and the returns you get on your investment make leasing and paying Serco to do it much more expensive, unnecessarily so. I think the risk that you're talking about with regard to the vehicles not being available after 4 years is actually very low. These are a type of vehicle that's been going for a long time now, very similar style. Yes, there will be improvements, there'll be new diesels and whatnot, but during the life of a vehicle, it's not going to make that much difference. This is by far the best method.
Councillor Lee Harper-Davis, do you want to come in?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. I think sort of Bill mentioned the cheapest way. I think we have to look at the most effective way of street and of waste collection, really, for our residents. So, you know, sort of like when you look at the, I just want effective manner of waste collection, because then we're looking at the most value for the best value for money. I think that's the most important thing, the effect that our residents will have for having a fleet that is going to effectively take away their waste as the best way forward. And also, probably alluding to Councillor Parsons' question, it's also an investment as well, because as Matt may allude to during this evening, we'll come to a point where we may be able to work with other district councils as shared services. And this, you know, when the time frames work out as they do, as the various district councils come to the end of their contract, it puts us in a position that we can actually, you know, work with the other councils. And so our fleet is actually a great investment to us. So that's really what I want to say, Chair. Thank you.
Chris, if you introduce yourself for this. Thank you.
My name is Chris Clay. I'm Strategic Director for Neighbourhoods and Community Wellbeing. I thought it would help just because it's involved some of the earlier process of when we started this journey with the contract, and just a couple of points are on here, so we'll stick to the points. And also I was concerned that some of the points may have been lost on Councillor Draycott's questions about the fleet and the price. Just to be clear, when we first procured this contract, it wasn't the cheapest option that we went for. There was a quality and price split, and it wasn't the cheapest option. So the concern about going for the cheapest option, I understand the point you're making about ideology and methodology or mode of in-house versus external outsourcing, but the emphasis around quality was there, and that was, that affected both the wayside and the street cleansing side. So though at the start of a contract that was well written, and some of the elements around the performance measures were written at the start. So I think going back to your point, which I don't want to go back over, but what constitutes clean, there was not just the national guidance that Matt has referred to, but also some of the elements of where we'd taken photographs of the borough and tried to make sure that the contractor understood those areas and what constituted an A grade. But in terms of the fleet going forward, the aim around us procuring it, and I think you've made the point already around being able to have something that either way we need to purchase. The issue around the wider authorities, that decision hasn't been made at this point. It was to give us the ability to procure together going forward, and we still have that ability to do that with the fleet or with the waste contract itself, so that it gave us a wider bargaining chip in the market effectively. And with the fleet itself is also... I know the officers already have been doing some work in some independent research for the fleet about identifying experts and give us the information around the latest technology. So your point around what's out there and what we can procure and use in the best way. We will be looking at options that has that longevity. And certainly from the fleet that we've had at this point in time, we really have maximised the longevity. So using those vehicles at this point in time, we've done well to go beyond the lifetime of the existing contract. I think just last thing to say about the model going forward, I think you're quite right, either way we have to purchase something, but the options around that were carefully analysed by independent experts outside of the authority. So this wasn't Serco, this wasn't somebody else who had an ability to take a financial advantage around that. And it does, as Councillor Harper-Davies says, that gives us an asset, but that also gives us that ability to use that bargaining chip with the existing contractor and going forward. So it's not just in the sum of the parts with our family group, it's what is important to Charnwood. So that cost going forward, it minimises the risk of the authority and the ability to service this fleet and the insurance of the fleet. The risk would sit with the contractor going forward now, but in the future we would be able to then have this period of time to effectively analyse the market to get the best option for Charnwood as well.
But we own the current fleet?
No.
So if we don't own the current fleet, the contractor wouldn't have assumed at the start of the contract that we were going to purchase a fleet at the end of the contract. So my assumption would be that the contractor would have built in a sinking fund or built into their figures the replacement cost of a fleet at the end of the contract period. Because if I went into a contract in 2009, I wouldn't have gone into that contract thinking at the end of this contract someone else is going to buy a fleet and I can carry on working. So I would have thought that the contractor would have built into their equation the fact that the fleet, an asset, so I'm used to lottery projects where you build in a sinking fund so that we don't ever have to fund that pavilion clubhouse again. We build a sinking fund into the revenue model to ensure that when that life of that facility is ended, we have a sinking fund which now has the replacement cost. The contractor wouldn't, I doubt, from the limited experience I've got, have considered not replacing that fleet at the end of the contract period or having to do something at the end of that period were they wishing to continue. So it's an unusual series of circumstances in terms of the consideration, I think.
But they're just charging us this price into the contract.
It is.
Yeah. So it's just the price, it's part of the price.
Continues.
It doesn't make any difference to the cost, it's just part of the price.
Yeah.
They're not giving us a free fleet now, are they? They're charging us over 7 years, as Matt's explained. So whatever the cost of the fleet on acquisition was, whether they bought it or leased it or however they acquired it, they've priced into the contract. And in the next contract, if there is one, they'll price it again. And if there isn't a fleet to actually provide, because there's already one provided by the client, they won't price it. So it's just a financing option, as Councillor Bevington said.
I've got Councillor Hamilton.
And then. To be honest, I'm not quite sure if it's already been answered. I'm just trying to kind of work my way through what people are saying, because it links into what Councillor Parsons has been saying, is that if we then bring in house, as it were, the ownership of the fleet without bringing everything in house, there is the assumption that if we then go out to tender, that fleet is acceptable, or there won't be a premium put on using our fleet that the service provider will give. In other words, are we reducing our optionality by taking physical ownership of the fleet without bringing in house? Mm-hmm. Or will Serco cost us for using our fleet?
I think actually, Cap Simonson, that probably the reverse is true, that by us owning the fleet, we'll be seen as a more attractive contract by contractors, because they won't have to find the finance to finance the fleet, go borrowing money that will sit on their balance sheet, and their mobilisation for the contract when they come in will be much quicker and easier, because we will have already have those resources here for them to use. So far from being a penalty to an incoming contractor, it would be seen as an attractive proposition.
Would they not price in a higher, say, maintenance cost for something that's now 4 years old or something like that? Or? It's going to be a net cost, even though it seems cheaper.
The maintenance of the vehicles does increase with age, as in most vehicles, and that would be priced in. But I think for We're recommending in this report that we finance the vehicles over 8 years, so that incoming contractor, if it was a new contractor, would only be obligated to use that fleet for 4 years, and at that point in time we would take a view as to whether we could extend the life of that fleet and pay no depreciation on it, or we could take the option to renew at that point. I think running fleet for 7 or 8 years is good practice, and they'll still very well serviceable at for that duration, that period of time. So I don't have any big concerns about that length of time.
Can we move on with the report?
No, that's
I don't know if it's actually the right point to ask this question, because it's something that at one point I'd like to ask. What I haven't heard right now is the rationale of outsourcing to in-housing in terms of complete bringing everything in-house. You know, what was the consideration over that? What was the thought processes?
We've got high level advice as part of the consultants report, and I think we heard some of the advantages of that earlier on, but there are a number of disadvantages around costs and risks, and really to insource that type of service there would be a number of costs, not just for those people delivering the service, so but as an organisation we'd have other costs to central overheads as well, and I'm not sure that it would provide any cost efficiencies, to be quite honest. It may well cost more, so for example you may need more finance people, HR, certainly health and safety advice would go up considerably, and you have to look at the costs of doing that. But we did some high level analysis and asked the consultants to look at that, and they provided the advantages and disadvantages. Not, I guess as a project board, but we felt that the disadvantages of in-house service outweighed the advantages and chose to go with this particular option.
Purely on cost, because I'm thinking also that of the responsible employer or the responsible procurer, as in the terms and conditions of the employees. Is that a factor? Okay.
All the employees that are employed by Serco are employed responsibly. They do get a living wage, access to a pension scheme. They do work quite quickly. They've got a lot of work to do, but people on the refuse rounds, once they've finished their round and all the bins have been collected, they go home. They frequently go home before their contracted hours expire, so they actually work less than they get paid for on some occasions. So that is one of the reasons why sometimes they rush around the rounds. It's not because they're particularly under any time pressures and things like that. But I think we ought to recognise that Serco are the responsible employer, really, and I don't think we've got any evidence that suggests that they're not. So we would have to take that.
Just a question, is there an actual threshold that we use for that, or is it just you kind of have a sense of what the company is like? You measure it, basically.
Yeah, we've got a sense of what the company is like. A lot of the employees there have been there for quite a long time. They don't have particularly high turnover of staff. I certainly get to meet the staff quite regularly down there. A lot of them have worked for the previous contractor and even the council before that. I mean, a guy retired last year and he'd been working there 30 odd years. So I think we just have to accept that they're responsibly employed with good terms of and conditions of service, and that's certainly the impression that I get.
One of the other things we looked at, Chris Trail, strategic director, one of the things we took into consideration as well is the size of Charwood as an organisation. Serco is a big company, and if we have problems in terms of, which we don't, of volumes of staff being able to cover around, they are able to move around and train people. They dedicate a vast amount of money to training, and they're very good on their safety record, yeah, in terms of their staff. So that resilience versus coming back into an organisation where we don't have a cohort of people to say, tell you what, we'll just put you on the bin round today, whereas they do, they have that capacity, and they're trained individuals. And the fleet going forward is that they're very specifically trained, and the conversations that we have on the team not just monitor on a monthly basis. We have a quarterly meeting at the strategic level with them, and they were coming back to talk about the need to pay drivers at a higher level, because to make sure they can get that expertise and that safety concern because of the level of the vehicles and the technology that's employed in that as well. So they treat it very respectfully, and they treat their employees very respectfully as well.
If I can add, it's Matt Bradford again, that we did have an inspection last year by the Health and Safety Executive. The waste and resources industry is known as the most high-risk industry that we have in the UK, even higher than construction. We had a Health and Safety Executive visit, and we passed that without any recommendations being made. So they are a responsible employer.
Okay. Just to wind up that, Councillor Harper-Davies, and then I've got a couple of councillors who want to come in.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Harper-Davies. I'm not sure whether, Councillor Hamilton, you've actually had the paper, which starts at page 21. I think that gives you the whole review of why we, or the executive summary from the company that we chose to do the research for us, and why we do what we do, and what the suggestions are moving forward. That's really quite conclusive and inclusive. If you want to look through that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor
Parsons.
I may be wrong here, and I'm sure Jeff will correct me, but when Serco spend a very large figure on capital, they get a very large capital tax allowance, which I would have thought more than outweighed any difference in the interest rates for our borrowing. So when Serco spend, let's just have a random figure, when Serco spend £10 million, they'll get whatever, £2 million back capital tax allowance. So the actual cost of Serco is £8 million, let's say. When we spend £10 million, we spend £10 million. So we might be able to borrow at less than Serco, but with the capital tax allowance that a corporate would get, I'm struggling to get into my head that we're in a cheaper place and that Serco can't do the capital cheaper than we can.
If I could come back there, Councillor Parsons, one of the reasons, as part of the extension that we're recommending as part of this report, there's a maximum period of 4 years that we...
I understand the cash flow. I understand the depreciation of the cash flow in the four-year period to the eight-year period.
Yeah.
But in terms of the cost to us versus Serco, I need to be persuaded that the difference that we borrow at is even close to the capital allowance Serco would get on the vehicles, because then the whole argument changes to only a cash flow argument, which is very different to a cost of capital argument.
Okay. So the reason that we're recommending to 2024, I think you understand this, is that is the maximum term that was allowed under the original contract. It was 7 years plus seven. Maximum term, 14 years. At the point the contract expires, there's a maximum period left of 4 years. Serco aren't prepared to borrow money and depreciate the cost of those vehicles over 4 years, because depreciating over 4 years instead of eight makes that proposition unaffordable, uneconomic. And that option wasn't on the table as part of this extension consideration. So we have the choice, if we wanted to extend the contract, to either lease or to purchase the vehicles ourselves. I'm not an expert in capital tax allowances, unfortunately, so I can't really come back on that particular question and advise on that. We have taken some treasury advice from independent experts on this, and they have advised us that purchasing the vehicles rather than a contractor is the best method for us going forward.
I've got a question for Councillor Lee Harper-Davies on the similar theme. Apologies, go on. Here you go.
I was going back to the point that Councillor Draycott made, and also has been written by Councillor Hamilton, is the staffing conditions and length of service, which Mr. Bradford has answered to a certain extent. I've been in business one way or another for over 40 years, and I'm not counting council work. If staff don't feel that they're being treated well, they will leave. We have had, and I'm sure Councillor, Mr Bradford alluded to this, is the fact that you're dealing with an international company here. They can't afford for their staff not to be looked after. Some of us around this table will remember what it was like pre-2009. To have staff that are happy to stay there, and by that they've been 2P'd, both from the council, the previous contractor, to this contractor. We've had families working there. It's gone on. I think the health and safety executive and all other associations that look at that would have to say that this is high priority. The safety, the working conditions, and the, and Mr. Bradford might be able to tell me, do they have ongoing training checks? Do they have sort of upgrades on the latest H&S works and things? Because I think I agree with Mr. Bradford that this is one of the most dangerous industries. You're not only dealing with waste and weights and things, you're also dealing with traffic. You're dealing with other people. One of the reasons I think that I see in my village why they're quite often running around, they like to, keeps them going. And, you know, they never do anything dangerously. And so I just think their conditions of work and their ongoing training and maintenance and care, I would like reassurance that that is still and would be in place with whoever you would take on as a contract. This is a main concern that we look at. Not in this council, I would hate to think that anybody that dealt with this council, externally or internally, we did not first of all take the care and welfare of their staff as we do of our own.
Correct.
Because that has to be built into the contracts.
The workforce at Serco do receive both formal and informal training, depending on the job that they're doing, and have refresher training, toolbox talks. The drivers in particular get very extensive training and are subject to quite a lot of checks, as you would expect. They do receive everything that they need. As well, Serco is a responsible employer. They recognise the risks that are out there. So only a few weeks ago, they took all their workforce through drug and alcohol testing to ensure that there was nothing there that alarmed them. So they're a very responsible company, and they need to be. And I'm satisfied that they are, that they've got all their training and procedures in place, and they're doing a good job in a safe way and providing the residents with a good service.
Okay, Cassidy Appleton, I'll come to you. Matt, I'm going to just work on the same thing. If you were our officer looking after an in-house service, do you think you would do anything less than Serco were doing to be a responsible employer? Any less training? Any less checks? Anything different to what Serco are doing?
You'd
have a statutory legal requirement. To flip it the other way, the new employees that Serco are recruiting into the service, do you think they've got a final salary pension scheme? Do you think they're on hours that would be on a certain scale, performance reviews that are regular? I'm just saying. Do you think?
I don't know I'm sure they've got access to a company pension, whether it's a final salary scheme.
So the terms and conditions are probably a lot different than they would if they were employed by the local authority. So when we're saying it's not apples for apples, it's not pears for pears. I know I employ lots of people. I know. So the terms and conditions aren't the same, aren't similar as if they were employed by a local authority. So, you know, Serco do a service. Let's not wax lyrical. But also, were you aware that Serco wanted to sell the service, bundled it all together, wanted to sell it, but they didn't find a buyer in the market, so that's why they kept it in house.
I don't think that's. If I could come back, Chair, I don't think they pulled out because they couldn't buy a buyer per se. From what I understand, there were a number of people interested. Actually, I think the reason that they didn't sell this part of the service a number of years ago was that they found the whole process of selling contracts midpoint very, very complicated, very time consuming, and those contracts were expiring as they were going through the process of novating
the contract. But the thing is, I can understand the contractor, but my question to Lee, we extended the contract a few years ago for a length of 3 years, I believe. So we've gone 3 years. Did it enter anybody's mind or your thought processes to actually go out and tender again the whole contract?
Thank you, Chair. It was all part of the procurement review process. I believe, being involved in a couple of procurement processes now, and obviously my experience and knowledge is gained all the time. And I think whenever or whatever contract we look to go out to, or whatever service we look to provide for our residents, we look at every option possible. And I believe entirely that we've done that. Just coming back on your point to Mr. Bradford in relation to the workers, I truly believe, and I know exactly what you sort of say about, do we look after, will Serco look after their employees as well as Charnwood? And I think if the employees weren't happy, they would leave. As your colleagues have mentioned, I'm sure if I wasn't happy doing something, I would leave. Because that's our choice, and we can only do what we can do, and as long as they're protected from a health and safety perspective, I think that's what we're honoured to do. But I do believe we've looked at all the various options that are available to us in going forward in the refuse and open spaces.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to ask you that question about whether we looked at going to tender, because obviously we know the shelf life of the vehicles, it's come to the end. To me, it would be a prudent thing to do, actually. Let's see in the marketplace who is available to provide us with the service. That prevents us spending X amount of money, and it's a considerable amount of money, and have that presented to me to say, actually, if we didn't extend the contract, we went into the market, this is what it would cost us. But we haven't had that analysis. It's not in the paper. There's not a cost figure. So we can't make that comparison. So, the market in 3 years or 4 years' time and out will have moved on. Costs move up. Costs always go up. So it would have moved on. So I thought it would be prudent to have had that now.
Yeah, Thank you, Chair. And in reply back to that, why would we really fix something that isn't broken? Why, they deliver, Serco deliver a good service.
What I'd say is,
I know exactly what you're saying.
We'd want to fix it because we know the vehicles, the substantial amount of money that... They're obsolete.
Yeah.
They're obsolete.
Not yet.
So at the end of this contract.
Yeah, I appreciate.
So I know my members are saying not yet, but at the end of the contract. So the procurement process we should have started probably earlier. Now we're going to go into a procurement process, potential procurement process with vehicles that we may own if the decision goes ahead. Halfway along, and then we go to another contractor or same contractor and say, actually, we've got the vehicles already. And we're on possibly either a stronger or a weaker bargaining chip, depending on which way you look at, in a half glass full or half empty. I don't understand why we wanted to get into that. Why didn't we just go out and
it all comes at a cost. And going forward, I believe that clients at Barclay and myself both work with the project team, and we sort of work with officers, and we're a critical friend. And we have, as far as I'm concerned, looked at the various possibilities and various options, and I will still stand by the officer's decision.
Okay, which is fine. Yeah. So then moving on to the next step. So now you've decided to actually extend the contract. I understand, but I haven't finished, Councillor Bevington. Once I'm finished, I'll pass it over to yourself. So my final question really is that now we buy in the substantial part, which is the equipment for the staff. Serco staff to use. So we're going to have the Crown Jewels, and they're going to have the labour force to use the Crown Jewels. So why don't we consider an in-house model, just to model it to see how much that would cost us? Because we're going to spend X amount of money, without referring to the paperwork, on the equipment. The only thing we don't have is the labour force to operate the equipment or to walk the streets with the equipment. So did we... I don't understand why that didn't come into the thinking. Why didn't we think, actually, if we're going to buy the equipment, and that's the substantial part, why didn't we consider an in-house option?
Because there is always a risk, and there's always a risk. If you to look at the if you look at retrospectively Almo, there's always a risk in bringing bringing staff to pay in-house. And the what the team do, the Serco team do, they offer a great service. They offer a great service, but what they need is the provision of a new lorry. So as far as I understand, and Matt, maybe you can sort of assist me in this, they're happy with the staff provide the service. All we need then is to carry on with the service, but we need to come to a decision about buying the fleet, whether we do or we don't. So I don't know whether any Matt or Chris, you have anything further to add to that.
What I would say is that there are three main resources, really, that you need to make this contract work, not just the operatives and the fleet. You need the depot as well, and a functioning depot with a licence, which we haven't got at the moment. So that's something that we'd have to obtain.
But we pay for that through our contract services, so it would be the same. We'd pay for that in-house.
But we don't own that depot. It's not our resource, and it may not be available to us at a point in the future if we chose to in-source, if you like. I think we didn't go through a cost-by-cost exercise of costing out in-house provision. The evidence that we had from the consultant did indicate that it would be much more expensive, both in employing the operatives to deliver the service directly, but also for the council in...
You say that, but there's no cost for us to critically, you know, think that. You say that, that's fine, it's words, but there's no evidence to back that up. There's no physical evidence.
I think, Chair, the only way in order to prove or disprove this would be go through a tendering exercise, and at which point the offer that we've got on the table here may be off the table, and we may have more expensive costs if we went to procurement. So there's a risk. The only way that you're going to be 100% sure whether your costs are going to decrease or increase is to do the exercise. But at which point you've done that, it's too late. We've had what we think is a good offer from our existing provider. We've looked at the cost, the quality, and the satisfaction, and we think that it's a good offer, and that's why we made the recommendation that we
Thank
did.
Thank you very much. Councillor Babington.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chairman, we seem to be losing the track of what we're actually here for. Mm. We're here to discuss the calling of a cabinet decision. We've moved on to handling staff, we've moved on to pensions. I don't actually think that's got anything to do with the calling, I'm sorry.
I refer to the in-house work does not have to finance the profit margins of a contractor, being in-house or outsourced, being well-drafted. I was just following that on the calling, so that's part of the discussion of the calling is potentially staff working for us and not working for us. But I've been free with every member to talk as if feel fit on that one. But if you feel that it's not moving that way, your point taken, move on to the next councillor.
There's no point in going any more, Chairman. I think I've made my point as well as I need to. I think let's move on to the next stage, shall we? Which is, I think, a general discussion.
No, is there any further councillors who want to make any?
Just a short point, yeah. Thank you, Chair. I take the point that Councillor Bennington made. He pointed out that what we were talking about here is the extension of this contract. I think the points that he made about the terms and conditions of employing staff are very valid, but I think that is to be considered when we come to negotiate the next program. So I think we...
Okay, that's fine. Is there anything further the officers or the lead member you'd like to add before we...
No, I mean, I jotted down all Councillor Draycott's concerns, and certainly from what we've discussed this evening, points of handle, I feel, unless Councillor Draycott comes back to the table, I feel that we've actually covered those.
Thank you. Before I ask the officers and the lead member to leave, is there any other further questions that members would like clarifying or asking before they leave, because the next step will be that we will go into our discussions, and the outcome will be one of those two that Jeff alluded to at the beginning of the meeting. Yeah. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's enough to leave. Yeah, there's enough to leave. Just leave. That's right. Thank you. Right, we're back to now the discussion. So we've heard from Councillor Draycott and we've heard from the officers and the lead member, Councillor Lee Harper-Davis. Councillor Bovington.
Thank you, Chairman. We've heard a lot of information about it, and I think we've gone off into the byways and highways. I think it's fairly straightforward. We've heard all the information that I think we need, and therefore I'm going to propose that we actually accept the cabinet decision, and we should support it.
I'd like to second that proposal.
Okay, so we have a proposal by Councillor Bemington that we go with item, well, number one, support the decision, yeah, which can then be implemented immediately, and seconded by Councillor Paling. Do any members want to talk to it or have any contrary views? Otherwise, we'll go to the vote.
I just make some observations. I still think there is still
a public risk, because one person's useful tool in the future negotiation is somebody else's restriction on what we can actually do. And it's not our money we're spending. We're spending other people's money. We're spending the public's money. And there may well be more behind this. I know from the purple papers, there's a number of appendices referenced in the purple papers that are not actually here, presumably because it was thought they didn't need to come into this or weren't relevant to the discussion, but there's a number of papers referencing the appendices in the purple that we don't have at our disposal tonight. But I'm not completely sold on the decision, on the capital decision, certainly.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hamilton?
Councillor Hamilton. Yes, I agree that it's kind of quite a nuanced thing for me. It's a lot of money, and I've heard the arguments and understand why decisions have been made, but I do worry about whether we're restricting our optionality in the future. And whether or not it might be useful just to have a second look at it again to make sure we're comfortable with the original decision.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Hamilton. I'd like to add, echo what Councillor Parsons says actually, a little bit, and but Councillor Hamilton, I think we're trying to put a square peg into a round hole here. The contract's only for a further extension period of 4 years when the vehicles will be in use, but we're going to buy the vehicles for 8 years or depreciate for 8 years, potentially a little bit longer. But we haven't explored all the avenues, and I think we've missed a trick here. The council and the cabinet have missed a trick here. The contract was up for negotiation, really, and we could have gone out to tender, and we could have found a new contractor to provide us with the vehicles, and it would have been X amount of money. But I think we've lost the opportunity to compare one set of costs with the cost that's being presented. And I think we will go out to tender eventually in 4 years or 7 years from now, or actually about 5 years from now, because the tender process. But I think costs will have moved on in the market quite substantially, actually, probably. This would have been an ideal time when a lot of outsourcing companies are raising their costs, because let's face it, in the capital markets, they've gone to their shareholders to shore up their balance sheets. I think it would be an opportunity for us to explore an in-house provision, because it's one of those things on an in-house provision is that we set the criteria, we set the agenda. If we want a street cleaning every day, we don't have to go to a contractor to renegotiate the contract. We could set that ourselves, the parameter ourselves. But I understand that members here would like to propose to go with supporting the decision. So if there's no further comments, I'll go to the vote.
So all those in favour to support the decision, which then can be implemented immediately, so cabinet decision.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Chair.
All those against?
That's 2.
And any abstentions?
That's 1, sorry.
Good. Thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is closed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Okay.